comes asleep.
Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody lucky enough to have a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guests, plural for a reason, are two cannabis activists, marijuana activists, hooch activists, pot activists, weed activists, ganja activists, sweet, sweet Shiba activists, hereditary strain super skunk activists. We've got Casper Leach from Time for Hemp and Billy McKee from Grand Cross New Zealand. Now, Casper is going to be the quote-unquote activist of the month in High Times magazine. It's a great honour. And Billy has just inherited from the state of New Zealand a fashionable ankle bracelet for growing cannabis and giving it and selling it to medical patients like himself. He had his leg sheared off by a drunk driver back in the day and tried all these pharmaceutical drugs, got totally messed up on them, as you do, as is the intention. And he found that not only did the weed take the pain away, but it didn't cost ridiculously large amounts of money and have incredibly dangerous side effects that made him go completely psychotic around his family. Okay? So these are the two people we're going to be talking with today. Guys, welcome.
Thank you. Hello, and it's an honor to be on your program. It's nice to be back again. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot, Vinny, for giving this opportunity to speak.
Well, and it's timely, isn't it? And incidentally, Billy, Casper sent me the article in the New Zealand media about your arrest. And so, I had a guest cancel for today, so I was like, here we are.
Things are going to happen, eh?
Well, some things do happen, and you have to get off your ass in order to make them happen.
Yeah, make use of them when they come up.
Yeah, man. That's what synchronicity is about, is a meaningful coincidence. And if you're not doing anything with real meaning, and only meaningful coincidence. Yeah. So, when we would like to start here, Billy, if you could tell us a little bit about this story that we had in the New Zealand media here pertaining to your arrest and subsequent conviction. What's the background about all this?
Well, as you know, I'm the director for Green Cross in New Zealand here, and we've been doing quite a lot of submissions and stuff like that to government hearings, and we're actually going really quite well. The Law Commission in New Zealand come up with a good recommendation for changes to the cannabis laws in New Zealand, they were really pleased about that. But, you know, then the government, you know, sort of squashed it all and wouldn't put any of the recommendations into practice. And anyway, I don't know what the reason was, but, you know, sometime about there, you know, an undercover cop was introduced into Greencross, and he was a very convincing liar, which I suppose, you know, undercover cops are. But we had another couple trying to get in before that, we sort of picked him up easy enough. But this one was sort of a bit more of a convincing liar, and he sort of got me actually quite worried about him, because he was sort of coming across that he's having these, you know, really severe headaches, which as Ginny indicates that, you know, can indicate that you're getting a brain tumour. And this, you know, he was saying that he was going to the emergency, accident emergency late at night and stuff like that, and he couldn't get any help from the doctors, and the only thing that ever worked for him was cannabis, and he couldn't get any, even though he was living in Wellington, where there was heaps of tinny houses available, you know. So I give him a hand with it, you know, just because I felt really sorry for him. You know, I've seen a number of people die from this brain tumours and stuff like that, and it's horrendously painful, torturous death, you know. It's just absolutely terrible. So I was trying to help this guy out, and, you know, he found out later on that he was an undercover cop, so I got busted, house turned over, you know, and they found a whole lot of plants growing underneath the house. So we took it to a jury trial, because I was trying to get that jury nullification introduced over here, you know. And so we had some flyers to hand out to the jury and stuff when they were coming in. So I don't know how many of the jury members actually got them. And then the judge sort of said that, you know, the jury wasn't allowed to do that nullification thing in New Zealand, which, you know, I sort of don't actually agree with. So, you know, because you can't punish a juror. They can't be punished for what they come back recommending. If the juror comes back and says, you know, we recommend that he's not guilty, then they can't be punished for that. So I reckon if we could have got that message out to the jurors, we might have done all right. Because I know there's a few of the people on the jury were sympathetic, you know, especially, you know, undercover cop, you know, doing the medicine thing. You know, it just looks bad, you know. But anyway, we couldn't get that in properly, and you know, we kept getting shut down in the trial. We weren't allowed to mention anything like that, you know. So it sort of was hard to get that in. And then I went up to sentencing just the other day, and, you know, I made a real muck up of that. You know, I didn't realise what was meant to have been done. We were meant to have put in a, you know, like a submission earlier with all our information into it. And we had lots and lots of information that I wanted to put in, and I haven't been able to get it out, you know, get the information into the court, you know. It just keeps getting blocked whenever I try to bring it in. So that was our chance to bring in a sentencing, and I mucked that up, you know, myself, because I didn't realise how it was meant to be done. So I'm sort of considering an appeal, and I probably will do an appeal, but I'm just sort of, at the moment, I'm just really burned out, and, you know, got no money, and I'm really tired, and sort of, you know, my enthusiasm sort of a bit down as well, because I've just sort of taken a bit of a beating. But that's what the intention is anyway, take it back to court again and try to get this other stuff in. But I did my own defence in the court case, which, you know, everyone said it was a bad idea, you know, and it probably was a bad idea, but I couldn't get a lawyer that would actually, you know, try to fight against these laws. All the lawyers, they just said, no, we only want to plead guilty, you know, and I didn't want to plead guilty, I wanted to challenge it. So the only way to really...
Well, that's because the lawyers, at the end of the day, work for the court. They don't work for you.
No, and they, you know, if those laws got changed, then, you know, like 50 or 70% of the work that goes through the court wouldn't go through there anymore. If we had a regulated cannabis market in New Zealand, you know, a lot of people that are going through court wouldn't even be there. But I spent a few days going up to court and, you know, just watching the processes up there, trying to figure out how I was going to do my thing, you know, and that's what I noticed up there. And there's a lot of very, you know, very sad cases, actually, of people going through. And there's one people, they shot a guy in the neck with a gun because they wanted some cannabis. You know, and I'm going, oh, this is just absolutely terrible. You know, why can't we have a regulated market, you know, with education and a safe supply and stuff like that? We just save so much. But obviously that doesn't seem to be going to happen with the current government that we've got here. They, you know, they're just totally not going to go ahead with that. So it is frustrating. And
so this is the same thing happening in the States, isn't it, and Canada, isn't it, Casper?
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, because, like, a few years back, you know, there was sort of, the cannabis was slowly becoming more acceptable, and then it was like there was a big resurgence of attacks on the medical cannabis users, and any cannabis users sort of got really heavily attacked. So now I'm sort of stuck at home with a bracelet on, and I'm sort of worried about, you know, the pharmaceutical prescription drugs that I've been using in the past, you know, because they have such a really bad side effect on me. So I'm really worried about starting to use them again, because when you start using them, sometimes you can't stop. They're quite addictive, but even on the packet it says, you know, once you start using them, don't stop unless you see your doctor first. And
You know what it sounds like to me, Billy? That sounds like a Pringles commercial. Once you pop, you can't stop.
Yeah. But I have a really bad side effects from that pharmaceutical drug. I really can't function the next day. I can't eat. You know, I can't speak. I can't really put a sentence together. And I can't even sort of get stuff done around the house, even, you know, like it's difficult in a wheelchair anyway. But, you know, when I have these drugs, I really can't. My brain's not working. You know, it's just, I just sort of sit in my wheelchair and just dribble out of the side of my mouth and scratch my head and try to work out what I'm doing. And that was really, really frustrating. And then you seem to, you know, and then something goes wrong and you sort of fly off the handle just, you know, really quite quickly. You know, 1 minute you're quite calm and collected and something, and then something goes, pushes the wrong button or something, and you just go totally off the bloody deep end. So, you know, I don't want to be, you know, being abusive and stuff like that to my family and things that are around. So, I don't know, it's just a very difficult position. It's the same position. A lot of people are in the same position, actually. We're all having a struggle. So I've got some hemp oil. I've been using that a bit more. That's the oil made from the seeds. And I just got some hemp seeds just the other day. And I've been eating them. So, you know, they help. They all help, those things. It doesn't help. You know, it's quite like having a, you know, eating cannabis or smoking it. You know, there's a lot more quicker help, and, you know, and it works really good to calm you down and everything, but at least the oil and the seed make me feel a bit better, you know. And I really want to stay away from the pharmaceutical drugs, because I, quite frankly, I think if I start using them, it'd probably be the end of me, you know. So I know quite a few people that have actually, you know, ended their lives, or other people's lives even, you know, when they've been using some of these, you know.
Well, it says there right on the label, can cause homicide or suicide, so... It's like, I'm feeling a bit depressed. I want something that's going to stop me from killing myself. Here, have these.
Yeah. It hurts the brain. Because when I get medicine from the doctors, and I go home and Google it to have a look at the side effects. And that was the last one I got. The side effect was that is, you may cause suicidal or homicidal actions or activities or something. And I'm going, oh man, you know, I don't even want them pills around the house.
Not be in a very good mood, kill myself or other people. Well, let me see. Maybe let's try and find another way here. I mean, let's talk about diet. Let's talk about exercise. Let's talk about your career. And let's talk about where you are in your life. Are you happy? Are you getting somewhere? That all that sort of stuff causes depression, and it's an easy fix to unfrack your own life, right? That's what they give people drugs for, is people who just kind of can't unmess the situation they're in for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And want to be zonked out like a retiree in a retirement village, just, you know, pulling donuts in the mobility scooter in the parking lot with the system up, you know.
Is that code for something? Pulling donuts in the parking lot.
No, I don't know about that, but it would interestingly enough, what would be the effect of cannabis on the brain in later life?
Yeah.
And would retirement villages perhaps even benefit from having a cannabis program? And who knows? They might suddenly have their grandkids being interested in coming over to meet and talk with grandma and granddad.
Well, actually, I have commented to Paul Stanford that it would behoove him to start a chain of nursing homes that had bong rooms and made available medical marijuana to its patients. We found that it helps with Alzheimer's, helps ward off the problems with Alzheimer's. People feel more young and vibrant as they smoke this, so they have a better quality of living. And there are many other health benefits besides just keeping you more mentally or emotionally sound. I didn't mean to jump in there, but as we do get older, we are finding out, too, which is weird. My parents used to say, don't you be smoking that stuff. You're going to fry your brain. Well, over the years, we've discovered from research after research and study after study that the more you smoke this, the healthier you are from it. You have better elasticity of your lungs. Your blood flows smoother through your system. You have less problems with stress. I mean, the list just goes on and on. I'm bipolar. And when they first diagnosed me with bipolar, the first thing they did was put me on lithium. And because I have no lithium in my system of any kind. And when they did that, I became lethargic. I just kind of like laid around the house. I didn't really care about much. I had lost my creativity. I wasn't even able to rearrange a living room, let alone, you know, do some kind of creative project, like put together a video presentation. And then they couldn't figure out what kind of other drugs to use. I was told I'd be a guinea pig. First we'll try this, then we'll try that, then we'll try this. And we tried all these things, and I kept having really horrible, 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 horrible side effects, from nausea to disillusionments to just kind of feeling a panicky, even wanting to kill myself. And finally, my doctor, who'd been my doctor since I was a 16-year-old kid, turned to me and said, look, I know you've been smoking marijuana. I've been your doctor forever. I've seen your blood readings. And look, I have patients who are in their late 60s, early 70s, who I prescribe it for depression, some for glaucoma, some are going through chemotherapy. As well as I know you, let me ask you something. When you smoke marijuana, do you feel euphoric? Do you get that real happy, happy feeling? And I went, no. And he said, okay, and when you smoke marijuana, do you feel so suicidal and depressed that you want to kill yourself? And I went, no. He goes, so when you smoke marijuana, it kind of leaves you in the middle where you belong. And I went, yeah. And he goes, uh-huh. See, the only thing I have to worry about is you getting the munchies too much. I don't have to worry about any side effects or you hurting yourself or playing guinea pig. And as your doctor, I think smoking marijuana would be the very best thing for you when you're dealing with your bipolar syndrome.
You know, I think that reminds me of the scene of, what was it, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. As your attorney, I advise you to get a really fast car with no roof. as your doctor, I recommend that you have marijuana. You know, it'd be brilliant. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Billy McKee from Green Cross New Zealand and Castor Leach from timeforhemp.com, the number 4, timeforhemp.com. We'll be right back.
Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time, it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what you mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business, it's business time.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, live from the very, very terribly hot, buttered country of New Zealand, because we produce a lot of dairy products, hence hot and buttered. Anyway,
and
I want to do a little experiment.
May I say something, Vinny?
Yeah.
For those who are wondering, yes, that's why I'm in a good mood. Before this program, I spent 2 hours working inside a gym, and then Jim got dressed and went to work, and then I took my shower and did the show.
Yeah, it's nice. Now, I'd like to do a silent exercise with the audience here, and I've asked this to crowds before. So just think about this, ladies and gentlemen. And just imagine that there's 10,000 people listening in right now or something like that, and they're all listening to the sound of my voice, and they're all kind of alongside you in this one particular experiment. And just by yourself, raise your hand if you know somebody that has ever used pot. anybody that you've ever known that's ever used pot.
My hands up.
Everybody's hands up. Okay. Now put your hands down. Put your hands down. All right. Now, second question is, raise your hand if you want to see any of those people go to jail.
Mitt Romney, put your hand back down.
Nobody got their hand up. Okay. Time to change the freaking law.
What's that?
It's time to change the freaking law. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Hey, and another good one, when you're doing that, you can say, right, all those that have used cannabis, put your hands up, and then put your hands down. That gets most people, and then say, right, how many people want to inject heroin, and see how many hands go up? There's not many. Bordering on none. So it's not really a gateway drug. The thing that gets to me the most, Vinny, is, cannabis has been proven to be a safe medicine for a long time, and especially like people have been using the cannabis oil recently, for some very serious illnesses like cancer and tumours and stuff like that. And in New Zealand, it should be between you and your doctor what you want to use. The doctors can prescribe us with opiates and other really, really dangerous drugs, but they can't prescribe us with a safe drug. It's just so frustrating for me because every day I get somebody ringing up that's either really, really sick or got someone really, really sick, in their family, young kids and stuff that are dying. And it's just really hurtful to me that we can't get this medicine to them. And I was talking to some people here a while ago and they had a hemp farm and they had a lot of that oil from when they harvested it, a lot of the oil from harvesting the hemp was available. They said, we're just going to plow it back in. And I said, can I get some of it and try it out on some of these people that are sick? And they said, yeah, sure you can. No sweat at all. Just get permission from the Ministry of Health before, so it's all cleared with them. So I contacted the Ministry of Health. Thought, this would be great. This safe medicine, we can do some trials and maybe help some of these people that are sick and dying. And the Ministry of Health, they just weren't interested at all. They just blocked every little step that I tried to make. There was no way in the world they were going to let that trial go ahead. So that was, devastating to me, that happened. I was trying to deal with some people that were dying at the time, and I was just saying, well, here's the medicine offered for free, and they just said, come and pick it up, so I could have gone and picked it up and I would have just given it to the people, but the Ministry of Health just wouldn't let us do it. So I was sort of, sad about that.
I find interesting is that people are walking around, driving around, after they've got two lithium tablets and a Prozac pill and like 17 different heart medications and they call us high.
I actually stopped driving my car when I was on some of those prescription drugs because I just, yourself you're not safe, eh? I'm just not going to drive my car because I just thought I'm going to hit somebody or hurt someone or crash the car, I just knew I wasn't good. So I stopped driving altogether. But see, I'm in a wheelchair. If I stopped driving altogether, I'm sort of stuck at home. I'm stuck at home now anyway with a bracelet. But, it's very restrictive. And I was really depressed when I was using them. I was going to cap my heart. I was going to commit suicide. It was only a matter of, a short period of time before I did it. I just, even through the day, just starting to cry and stuff like that over just about nothing. And I'm going, this is not a good sign.
And then, it's like being pregnant without the baby.
Yeah. And without the fun of getting there. And then...
You just feel fracked as opposed to actually, here's my bag about all of this. These medications and everything like that, who are the people making them? Oh, giant evil pharmaceutical companies? Oh, yeah. Who funded all of that? Oh, the giant evil Rockefeller foundations? Oh, yeah. How do they get that money? Oh, the giant evil frickin' Rockefeller oil fortune? How do they get that massive fortune? Well, the giant evil Rockefeller conspiracy to destroy out all the oil competitions so that they'd have a complete monopoly and using criminal tactics and even bullying and mafioso type stuff to do that. Oh, my God. Why did they start doing that? Well, there was the prime mark of the Rockefeller family, who was known as Big Bill Rockefeller, who was literally a traveling snake oil salesman, and after he scammed half the frickin' old West and then put it into oil so he can continue to scab the rest of us forever in many, many different ways. There's a long, sad litany behind all this, which never comes out. Now, we talked on the phone earlier before the show, Billy, and we talked about a man named Clayton Weatherston. And for those of you who don't know who Clayton Weatherston is, he's this dude who dated this chick named Sophie Elliott at a university in New Zealand, right? And he started taking Prozac, and he started acting a little bit weird and stuff like that. And then one day, he tripled his Prozac dose, and he stabbed her 217 frickin' times with a pair of scissors and cut her nose off, her ears off, and all of this sort of stuff. It was like horrendous, absolutely horrific. But they didn't tell anybody that Prozac has that kind of effect on people, okay? They didn't tell people that it makes you go absolutely demon psychotic, right? We're not talking about somebody going a little bit crazy. We're talking about somebody who's literally looking like they're full-on possessed type thing.
Yeah, on my third day on Prozac, they took me off of it because one night I went out and took my scissors and went out and cut all the flowers off of all my neighbors' roses and their tulips and all that. I mean, I went through the neighborhood and I destroyed everybody's, I don't know why, but everybody's flowers and shrubs. And and the next morning I remember doing it. I called my doctor, dumped my prescription, and said, that's it. That's actually when we decided to take me and put me on pot.
And is that, you didn't realize you were doing it?
Well, no, at the time, but when I woke up in the morning, I realized what I had done.
Oh.
I realized I had done that, and that's when I called my doctor and went, hey, I'm acting really stupid, I can't stop myself, and explained it to him, and I told him, I'm dumping this crap down the toilet, and that's when he had me come in, and we sat and talked for quite a while before he said, medical marijuana, I can't prescribe it in this state, but that's what you need.
Yeah. Because this Clayton Weatherspoon, he didn't have a violent history. He wasn't a violent person. I don't think he even had.
He was like a teacher's aide university lecturer.
Yeah, so you're never going to get in there if you've got anything on your record, eh?
Yeah. There's a huge history of all of this kind of stuff as well. There's a documentary that was sent to me by CCHR. You can look that up online, called Dead Wrong, and it's about all these mothers getting together and campaigning against the pharmaceutical companies and all the antidepressants that they're prescribing their kids, because all of these mothers' kids committed suicide very, very shortly after going on the medication. And they were never told about the side effects, they were never told what to watch out for, or anything like that. I mean, Casper, you could have very well gone out and killed somebody in there and then realised it the next day, nobody would have looked at the warning signs.
He could have gone through his house and killed his whole bloody family.
Yeah, there's even evidence, I think, it might have been Zoloft or something like that. I believe I had Dr. Anne Blake Tracy on the show. A woman had a nightmare, recurring nightmare, about her kids being drowned, one night, she acted out her nightmare, and she drowned all five of her kids.
Well, it doesn't get out there, eh, Vinny, that people are using Prozac and stuff and doing this sort of behaviour.
Hey, well, you know what the perfect thing is? It becomes instantly justifiable now because, there's crazy people out there. We don't know why people are crazy, but we've now got to have more police and take everybody's rights away for them as a result of all these crazy people, which we cause to be crazy and won't tell you the truth about why they're crazy in the first freaking place.
Yeah, exactly. See, we're in trouble, eh? We really are, sort of spring is freaking me out a bit,
Well, it should do, and that's what reality is. Reality is a scary, messed up place. Okay, people think that some people see weird stuff on psychedelics and stuff like that. Man, you will see weird stuff if you really start looking at life.
Yeah, and actually, I think psychedelics clear your brain. I agree with George Harrison from my own personal experience. You should do marijuana. You should do LSD 3 times. First time to learn and experience and enjoy the drug itself. The second time to learn and experience your own self, who you are. And the third time to realize where your place in the universe is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, it seems wise. And there's the other side of it as well. With any shortcut, there are associated dangers and risks than taking the long way around. And people have got to recognize that you can't just go into this with your eyes closed and think everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, because a lot of the reason these people are depressed when they go on to Prozac. There's actually, there's quite often a good reason for the depression. A lot of them have been subjected to traumatic experiences and they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of them haven't got jobs, so, you know, they're not doing good at school and stuff like that. They're not in a happy relationship, you know, and all those things are ignored. Plus a lot of other things. People are just stressed out about what's happening in the world, quite frankly. It, all those things are just ignored, and they just pump them full of Prozac or something like that, and then one day how come they're not going and doing things? It's because they're just not capable of it anymore. Their brain's been too drugged out to actually do things.
You know, I was around at a friend's place the other day, guys, and he was depressed, and he says, "Oh, I was kind of diagnosed with this, then the other, blah 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 blah." And he's a guitarist, a really good guitarist, right? And he's still going out and he's busking every day for a little bit of extra money, as well as the sickness benefits, to go out there because of depression. And I said to him, "Bro, if you were playing your guitar in front of 10,000 screaming fans." Yep. Would you need that medication anymore? No. Absolutely not. It's the circumstance that you're in that is messing you up, because your situation sucks, and your body tells you when your situation sucks, so you've got to change it.
Yeah.
Not drug it. Not block it out.
Yeah.
Be who you were meant to be. That's the only reason why you get really upset with stuff, is because you're not doing what you're meant to be doing. You're not who you're meant to be.
Well, that's funny you should say that, too, because one of the things I expressed to my doctor was straight up, I didn't appreciate the things that the drugs were doing because they were making me not be me, and I figured if I was born bipolar, there must have been a reason for that, and I wanted to embrace it. For some reason, it must make me more creative, and I must need that creative thought for whatever thing is in my path. And if I change it, it might destroy me. So if I seem nuts to the world, that's the world's problem, not mine.
Yeah, totally agree. People can be allowed to do what they want to do, you know, especially not hurting anybody else. And most people don't want to hurt other people. Most people are quite happy just cruising along doing something that they're happy with. And if they're allowed to do that and encouraged to do that and helped to do that, then a lot of the problems that we've got wouldn't be there. But our government over here is actually, you know, doing the opposite thing. It's exporting jobs. It's doing, you know, it's mucking up the schools. It's doing whatever it can to widen the poverty gap, and people are suffering. And we've got, I think, one of the highest suicide rates in the world, Binny, haven't we, in New Zealand?
The highest, and, you know, we went through, I was travelling with some Māori elders last weekend, Billy, and we went going through Otorohanga, I think it was, and we stopped off to the cash machine, and while we were sitting there in the car, we noticed that there were dozens of kids. It was a Saturday night, 7 o'clock in the evening. Dozens of kids sitting around, hanging out in the street, doing nothing. Yeah. There's no activities for them. No adults minding them.
Yeah.
Nothing.
And it's just trouble waiting to happen, eh? You know, they're just bored.
Look at it this way. Children need people to look up to. If the best person you've got to look up to is simply the guy who's a year older than you, leading your group around while you tag and try to sniff glue and stuff like that, and no wonder you're going to turn out really depressed and maybe kill yourself.
Yeah. What else do you think is going to happen? Oh, there's nothing else is going to happen apart from that.
You know, where the hell are the parents? Guaranteed, they're whacked out on Prozac because they're depressed that they can't control their kids.
And they probably got no jobs and stuff like that as well, at least unemployment. Now, you know, if people have got jobs to do something that they can do that they're reasonably happy, you know, to do, even if it's something simple, just gardening or something, you know, it doesn't have to be too much, but just something that they're happy to do, it just makes a huge difference to you. You know, it makes you go, I'm actually part of the community, you know, I'm sort of part of this world, you know, but if there's nothing for you, you know, and if there's value, just a burden on it because you haven't got a job, you know, you get a job, you're lazy stuff like that.
We'll be right back.
It's really depressing for people,
right? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get over a little bit of the economic depression on the news with Joe.com. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We've got Billy McKee from Green Cross New Zealand, the president of Green Cross New Zealand, trying to help people with medical conditions that the mainstream medical industry seems to fail so regularly. You'd wonder why it's not the largest medical organization in the country, and the answer is, it's illegal. Why is it illegal? We don't know. But it is.
I know why it's illegal. It's the money behind it. If it wasn't in direct competition with the petrochemical companies and the pharmaceutical companies, if it didn't take revenue out of the pockets of those barons, then it would be legal. They pretend that the reason why we're all stressed out about this plant is that it gets you high. Really, they give a rat's behind about getting you high. What they're stressed about is if it's legal, farmers are going to grow up for petrol, and in doing so, then we don't need OPEC anymore. And then people are going to start growing in their backyards to replace the medications that Lilly's charging $30 a pill for, and Lilly's going to stress out about the loss of income. And so that, along with the other reasons why, that money behind it, you know, the black market doesn't want to see it legal because then they got nothing to buy their bullets and their guns with. So, because, you know, if they take the money out of marijuana, who, how many people are going to jump in and say, hey, I want to be a hooker, I want to be a crack whore?
Yeah, I mean, why would you want OPEC when you can have an ounce pick?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I had to jump in there like that because I know why, and I didn't mean to just step all over your show like that, but hey, that's why. Follow the money.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. And the other thing is it's a really valuable food and like easy to grow food, so a lot of people would be able to just grow, you know, if it was legal, they could just grow enough hemp in their backyard to, you know, feed their families for the whole year. So that would sort of make a big impact on, you know, a lot of the food supply companies like Monsanto. I'm sure they wouldn't be very pleased with that sort of stuff.
Well, wasn't there an article that came out, Monsanto patented the marijuana strain or something? But you're talking about food there, and it turns out that back in the day, I think there was some kind of big drought in northern Australia and Darwin, and their communities survived because they ate hemp.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not surprised that a lot of the world used to survive on eating it. Eating the seeds and the oil, drinking the oil.
Well, it's highly nutritional, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty much the most nutritious food known to mankind. And I know when because I use the oil most days, you know, for pressure areas and stuff like that, I can't find anything else that I can put on my body that will stop these pressure areas getting really, really sore and inflamed and bursting through. But the hemp oil, it's like putting a piece of ice on something that's burning hot, you know, because it feels like someone's got a lighter under your butt, you know. And you put the hemp on it, it feels like you just put some ice on it. It works so well so quickly. And I drink it most days, but if I run out of it, within a couple of days of running out of it, I start having, you know, problems with my body, you know, quite noticeable. Yeah. Hey, and one of the things that I noticed with the hemp oil and with a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs is you can't get an erection anymore. Erectile dysfunction is what, if I use the pharmaceutical drugs, and then if I use the hemp oil, I get it back again.
I don't mean to laugh, but that may explain why, as I've grown older, I've gone from, well, not as much activity in my youth as in my older age. It's like, damn, that's all I want to do. So
it's supposed to get older. It does. It does make sense.
You get older,
better.
You're supposed to lose your interest, but as I've gotten older, shit, I can't control it.
Well, we've got a violating of the FCC regulations there with the S word. Sorry about that to the affiliates. But, it does make sex an awful lot better and much easier to do, I found.
Yeah. So Viagra in a bottle, eh?
Or Viagra in a foil.
Yeah, well, I call it because I use the hemp oil. So I call
and another thing, too, I think as you get older, you know, it helps because when you're buzzed, you don't really care if your partner's got gray hair and a wrinkle or two. But, you know, but when you're sober, it does kind of bother you.
Yeah. Well, it does. You know, like if you can't get an erection, you know, it does take a bit of fun out of your life. And also, you know, my wife was not too happy about that as well. You know, because she's starting to think, you know, are you getting it somewhere else or what's happening? Don't you love me anymore? That sort of stuff, you know? And I didn't know what was going on. And I just sort of had, like, no feeling whatsoever. No feeling at all.
I'm lucky. I have blow up dolls. They never step out on me.
Okay. Oh, that's nice.
Have they ever blown out on you? Like.
Oh no! I lost another girlfriend.
Oh. It's like a superwoman just flew out the window. Oh, again, some kind of a bit of a feedback there. Now, moving on from this incredibly thrilling topic.
Yeah.
I also kind of am cognizant of the fact that we've got a lot of urbanization going on. You know, everybody moving into the cities looking for work has been going on. It's been going that way since, like, since forever, basically. People have been naturally gravitating into more towns. And now we've got ghost towns, right, out in the rural areas, because it just ain't no work. And I felt that concentration in the cities is a really, 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 really bad idea. And you want to have much smaller villages and stuff all popped around all over the show with their own industry, their own capacity to support themselves. And with hemp being capable of making, 50,000-plus frickin' industrial products? I think we've just found a way to revitalize the rural economy. I think we've just found a reason for all those people who are stuck in the cities that really hate being in traffic and being stuck at a desk to go out and work on the farms and stuff like that. I think we've found an equitable commercial option for how to make a country independent from other countries' globalized frickin' economy, free trade BS.
Well, what you say is even applicable here in the United States. I don't mean to interrupt again, but in the state of Michigan, where we had the auto industry as a center of attention for so many decades in America, when the auto industry went bust, not only did the city of Detroit, but the entire state of Michigan went bust. And when you go through the state of Michigan, it's like a ghost state, not just a ghost town. And now we're trying to get Measure 80 in Portland, Oregon, passed on the ballot. We've already got medical marijuana, but Measure 80 would allow for industrial hemp. And what you just say is true. If we are able to start growing hemp in Oregon to produce our oil and our fuel and our foods and our papers and our fibers, you know, it'd be kind of foolish to grow 40 acres of hemp to make hemp paper and ship it to China for China to make it. Hell no. We're going to have our brothers and sisters down the road employed in a factory someplace making that hemp paper and that hemp clothing.
But manufacturing is actually the source of real wealth. People don't realize this, that when you create numbers on a computer, that ain't real wealth. You haven't actually made or produced anything from nothing, okay? You're simply making it up, okay? Yeah. When you've got something that's real, physical, that has a utilizational tool that needs to be processed in a specific manner so it can be pushed into that fiber, that tool, that clothing, or whatever, it's actually the process of the manufacturing, the inventing of the machines, the contracting out, so you can actually get people to pay people to harvest it, pay people to process it, pay people to repair the machines when they break down, pay people you've got all of those workers as well who are getting money, and they're in a particular area, they'll go to that area's restaurants, they'll go to that area's gas stations, and the entire economy starts to pick up because you've got all of this extra money that is now flowing through the local economy. The local rural economy is really where it's at. That was the source of all of our nation's wealth in the first place. New Zealand, we're still number one project is industrial agriculture, and I would think that would be the real idea, is to focus primarily in terms of your economy on industrialized agriculture so that you can produce far more per hectare of land and get more products, that sort of thing. In New Zealand, we've revolutionized farming with the training of dogs, for instance, that one guy with 10 dogs can do the work of 40 families of Filipino farmers living on the same chunk of land.
Vietnamese
or Myanmar, I think, was actually where that had. They have these big kind of family farms where all bunches of different families all live on the land. They all till it, they all work it, that kind of stuff, whether that be sheep, hogs, cows, rubber plantations, whatever, you know. And it's just terrible efficiency because they're not using the technology, they're not using the training, and they're not using a terribly large amount of animal husbandry. We revolutionized that stuff, man. And now we had a hemp farm that was planted in New Zealand not too long ago. They're only allowed to plant 10 acres, right, of hemp. And yeah. Animals ate 9 of them. Because, you know, look, humans are not the only beings that love weed, man.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah,
that's why you can make animal feed out of it, too.
Yeah. Oh, it's really good animal food. The animals love it. We were getting some a while ago and giving it to their chickens, and it had a sick dog, gave it to the sick dog too, and the hemp picked him up a lot. He was, you know, he had big ulcers and stuff like that hanging off his stomach that I didn't want to get operated on, and just fed him some hemp for a while, and his fur got soft and shiny and smooth, and the ulcers on him sort of shrunk away as they started shrinking, and the chickens love it. They're just getting enough of it. It's really expensive to buy, which is ridiculous, yeah. considering how cheap you should be able to grow it.
Hey, well, you know how we were talking about OPEC before and stuff like that? Well, when you're feeding weed to a chicken, that is called OPEC, isn't it?
Chicken
picking at an ounce. I don't know. All right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Casper Lee from Time for Hemp and Billy McKee from Green Cross New Zealand. We've got another hour, and we want to take some callers as well. So the phone lines are now open for you, ladies and gentlemen. You can call in now, and we'll be taking your calls after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Be back right in just a few minutes.
Virus, alert the masses.
Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me.
Welcome back.
And I can't help
to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. Can you guys believe we've already done a whole hour? You know?
Yeah.
It's burned up. Oh, yeah, yeah, it's burned up like a cone in a bowl. Now, speaking of which, have you noticed that so many artists, creative people, are real hardcore stoners? Like, it's a daily thing, right? And have you noticed that they keep being successful, they keep getting work done, and they keep baffling people with how freaking talented they are? And yet we get told every day, pot makes you stupid. Pot makes you slow. Pot makes you lazy.
First of all, Vinny, I want to say thank you for your compliment. That was really sweet. I appreciate it so you recognize my creativity and my talent like that. So that's all I wanted to say was thank you.
That was all for you, baby. All for you.
Vinny, you know those recent studies that were in New Zealand about, you know, people that are starting to use large amounts of cannabis at an early age and then they were having a lower IQ in their later age? See, but the thing is, like, what we want is a regulated market in New Zealand for cannabis. So if people want to use cannabis and they, you know, can have some education and, you know, a medical check, and then you have a safe supply and then a support system for anybody having any problems. So the mere fact that these young people were getting large amounts of cannabis, you know, that would have been addressed with a regulated market. But also in those studies, they didn't really look at any other things that might have been affecting those young people. You know, because if they were using a lot of cannabis, you know, were they using a lot of pee as well? Were they using a lot of alcohol as well? Did they have jobs? Had they been to jail? All these other things affect your IQ as well. If you spend a long time in jail.
You know what's funny is that also there's been a study done, and Dr. Bob Melamed has come out with this, is that when you smoke cannabis before drinking, you know how when you drink, alcohol actually destroys brain cells? Well, he found that when you ingest cannabis before ingesting alcohol, the cannabinoids form a protective seal or a layer around your brain cells and prevent cell death when alcohol is introduced.
Okay, well, that's a handy one, didn't it? And I've found that people that are, you know, that are drinking a lot of alcohol, if they have a smoke before they start drinking or a smoke, you know, while they're drinking, they drink less and their behaviour is actually better.
That's right, but if they're already drunk as having a smoke, then just sends you right over the edge, sends you spinning, And there's been a lot of rumor and circumstantial evidence to say that cannabis promotes violence and things like this. And this is debunked ad infinitum, because all the people that have been violent on cannabis were drunk at the same time as well.
Or on something else. When they're busy trying to fabricate evidence.
That's the difficulty. They try to blur the lines, don't they, between real hard drugs like alcohol, things that actually cause a lot of death, and cannabis, which in the 10,000 years of recorded usage, to my knowledge, at least, has killed nobody. In fact, as Jack Herer once said, the author of the Hemp Bible, the only people who get killed by cannabis are people who get shot in the back by the cops running away.
Yeah, that'd be it, all right. Yeah, just about all the harm being done, you know, is being done through prohibition. It's not actually being done by the plant itself. There's practically no harm being done by the plant. And that's really outbalanced by the benefits that we would get from the plant, as we've just been discussing recently, all the major benefits, you know. So it's unbalanced.
Let's compare the benefits of cannabis to the benefits of the law. Okay, envision this. You're at home and you're watching a movie and you're high and it's a comedy movie and you're laughing a lot, okay? Laughter releasing endorphins, and also you get a little bit hungry, a little bit thirsty, so you you make yourself dinner and you also drink a bit of water, okay? Then you finish the movie and you go to sleep, okay? So same scenario. You're sitting at home, you smoke a joint, you're watching a movie. Police bust it. They grab you, they put the push you down on the ground really forcefully, kneel on your back, putting pressure on your sternum, and then they roughly cuff your hands behind your back, and then they fasten the cuffs so tight that they actually kind of cut into your wrist. Then they shove you in the back of the police car, all while calling you a really stupid stoner and that you're the scum of the earth and what have you. Don't put your seatbelt on, so you're rattling around. And then you kind of jump into the cells. You stay there for a couple of hours. You're bored. You're hungry. You're kind of tired. You're about to go to bed at this time, that sort of thing. Then they process you. They give you your fingerprints, and then they interrogate you. They tell you to admit things. You know, where did you get it, and have you sold anybody before, and try to insinuate that you're some kind of criminal or evil person. Then you spend a few more hours in the cells with no clock on the wall. Time seems endless, like sensory deprivation. Meanwhile, you hear the police down the hall laughing their asses off and going, ha, ah, we busted this super scum stoner. Isn't he dumb? And then you get let out, and it's like in the middle of the morning or something like that. You have to stay overnight, and you got to figure out, how the hell do I get home? You know, I've got to catch a taxi or something. It's a little bit more expense. And then I get home, and then I go to bed, and I've got to go to court the next day. So, what caused more harm to you? Was it scenario A or scenario B?
Yeah. Definitely scenario B has caused heaps more harm. And it can put your job at risk as well. You know, see, there's quite a few people in New Zealand are sort of losing their jobs because they're doing the urine testing here to see if anyone's used cannabis in the last couple of months or been near anyone that used cannabis. And they can lose their jobs for that. And what's happening is they're losing their jobs. But it's also the domestic violence is increasing because cannabis is one of the best cures for domestic violence, apart from counselling and working through your problems. But if people can't smoke cannabis, then they tend to drink more alcohol, and then domestic violence figures are just going up and up. So one of the best ways to stop that is just sit down, go down the back and have a little smoke and chill out. But, you know, like you say, Vinny, it's just getting that hard to do that now, you know. Pretty sad.
Yeah. And this is the thing. People don't respect others' personal space anymore, and yet they want total privacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They think it's perfectly justifiable.
It's pretty much gone now, isn't it?
Do you remember back when I said, you know, if you know anybody who smokes cannabis, raise your hand. If you want to see any of them arrested, raise your hand. I said that to a crowd of people at a cafe once. Up on the microphone, and one guy says, yeah, I think somebody should be arrested, you! And I go, okay, sir. Well, here's the thing. Every single person in this cafe who didn't raise their hand disagrees with you.
Yeah.
And you are the only person in this whole cafe who the law agrees with.
Yeah. Yeah. I was handing out flyers the other day at the mall, and I said to this guy, oh, we'd like a flyer about, you know, cannabis law reform. And he turns around and he says, all those bloody cannabis users, they should all be lined up and shot. I'm going, and I think, I just moved on. I didn't want to talk to him anymore, you know. But I just thought, well, what a horrible thing to say, you know. You know, he's probably got kids and relatives and stuff and people that he knows that smoke cannabis as well. And to want, you know, people doing something that's non-violent and it's not hurting anybody and to want to kill them for doing that, it's totally out of whack. You know, I was thinking, man, you know, I wouldn't want to be living with you if you're going to kill somebody just for smoking cannabis. It's over the top.
Well, it's like, you know how some people get really irritated at some girly girl or whatever who dots her eyes with a little heart, you know?
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
actually want to kill that chick because she dots her eyes with a heart.
Excuse me, girlfriend. I do that.
Yeah, well, we don't want to kill you for it. We think it's lovely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, see, this is what we're talking about. Everybody's angry about stuff that doesn't matter, and they're blasé about stuff that does matter. Okay, like we've got this whole really messed up topsy-turvy situation, and what people don't realize is that there is a real human cost to this. Okay, people are suffering and dying not because of the weed. Not because of the weed, but because of the things that happen to them because they've got a little bit of weed and somebody else is an ignoramus scumbag.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's cause and effect, ladies and gentlemen, not effect and cause.
Yeah.
And let's think about the gateway drug effect. They say that cannabis is a gateway drug. Well, look at this. 85% of cannabis users in the United States only use cannabis.
Yeah.
And the only reason why there's even a black market for a lot of these other harder substances to the size and degree it is because dealers can lure people in who normally just have their cannabis and then offer them something else. That's also illegal, hence on the same basic market plane. Oh,
can I jump in here for just a minute? When mm-hmm. I was in the Army, I couldn't utilize cannabis. And, of course, it frustrated me. I was also stationed in Germany and had a nuclear missile site, and so they did a lot of urinalysis testing, so there was really no way around it. And I can honestly tell you that those of us who were normally cannabis smokers suddenly became not just drinkers but alcoholics. We did not, first of all, know our limits, and we secondly just didn't care because we were trying to reach the same kind of buzz that you get when you get from smoking a joint. Now, as soon as I got out of the military, and I mean as soon as I got out of the military, the very day I got out, I got a bag of herb. And that very day was the last day I ever touched liquor. Since that time, I've only had like 3 beers because I get such a nice buzz from marijuana. I'm very content and happy with it. That to waste my money on liquor is just that, a waste. And I'm very content with the, I'm able to function while I'm on marijuana, I'm able to drive, I'm able to be nice to people, and I'm able to make rational decisions as to who I fall in bed with when I'm high. But when I'm drunk, I can't do any of those things correctly.
No.
Now, there's another point to be made here as well, is different tolerances, because I know people that have smoked pot, having nothing else, but having a really, really bad reaction to it. And I was wondering, but when they drink, they're perfectly fine. They're always responsible, always happy. They never drive too drunk or anything like that. They might have a beer while they're driving or something of that nature, but they're not pissed. They're taking responsibility, right? But when they're on weed, man, they're just totally off the wall, going nuts all over the place, and it's just like, dude, you need to stay off the pot and have another beer, man. So some people have got different tolerances. Some people have multi-tolerances. Like I've known people who have been, you know, tripping balls on acid and ecstasy and alcohol and weed and caffeine and mixing up with a little bit of snorted Ritalin at the same time, and they're fine. You know?
I know, but I'm like you. Pick one for the night and stay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, everybody's right. Got their own pace and their own limits and their own tolerances and also what they're prepared to do. And what the law does, I find, is it arbitrarily says this group of people here who do anything outside of the alcohol, caffeine, and tobacco cartels is an evil, bad, bad person, and we must hate them and destroy their lives and prevent them from getting work and prevent them from actually doing what they're comfortable with, right? We need to arbitrarily do that just because we don't want it for XYZ reason, financial, pharmaceutical, political. Have you noticed how drug policy is surprisingly small portion of the US national budget and expenditure? Okay, it's like $134 billion or something out of $2 trillion. You know, it's relative. Oh no, I think it might have even been like a couple of billion, even like $30 billion or whatever. Really small by comparison to everything, and yet politicians will come out and campaign on drug policy and get a huge amount of votes out of it because there's a real good brainwashing campaign that was instilled and is still being deployed to this day to demonize cannabis smokers and any other drug user as an evil, bad person. Ergo, anybody who comes on the election platform that says, I'm going to get those filthy, evil, bad people with dreadlocks, everybody goes, yeah, vote for them and please take our rights. Sure enough, they wind up in a frickin' police state, but nobody's on pot anymore. Isn't that happy? Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
It doesn't even work that way, because you can't get rid of it. Just like you can't get rid of weeds out of your garden. That's why they call it weed, because it grows everywhere, man.
Yeah. And you can't get rid of it, because we actually need it. If I could get something from the doctor that would work for me, Vinny, then I'd just go and do that. It would save me heaps and heaps of grief, you know, I'd be happy with that. But I can't do that. You know, that's what I've been talking about earlier, the side effects of some of these medications is just absolutely lethal. And you like can just, you know, have a smoke or, you know, eat a bit of the oil or something like that, and I'm in a happy place, you know, and my body feels good and, you know, everything's calm and relaxed around the place and everybody's happy, you know, but I don't know. It's just, you know, wish it could happen. Wish it could happen legally.
Well, and this is the thing. The law doesn't work. Okay, so anybody who's a problem solver looks at something that doesn't work and then starts doing something else, right? But everybody who comes into the political spectrum with regard to the drugs who starts talking about changing the laws and what have you, last year, I think it was, during the election campaign in New Zealand, Don Brash, who was at the time the leader of the ACT Party, you know, the broad coalition for the governing party of New Zealand called National, which is basically the Republican Party equivalent of this New World Order crime syndicate we've got down here called the New Zealand Government or the Queen and Right of New Zealand.
You're such a cynic.
Yeah, I know. I'm a Vinny cynics. A Vinnick. Yeah.
Accurate, though.
Well, yeah, and he came out and said, I think we should do away with cannabis prohibition from a libertarian-esque party standpoint. And the amount of things that came out attacking his character as a direct result of saying that absolutely logical and sensible thing from all of the juxtaposing media that we have in this country. There were even articles in the Chinese Times in central Auckland having a go at him. Like they even made a new name for him. Like he got a new nickname for coming out for cannabis legalization. Instead of calling him Don Brash, they called him Bong Hash.
Oh, really? That's incredible, eh? and I remember making that press release, and it was a very accurate press release, and we just had all the recommendations from the Law Commission saying that they needed to be changed, and that was a big study, you know, an evidence-based study, and I thought that would have pulled a few people around. And then Don Brash comes out with that, and I thought, oh, this will be good, you know, this will get a bit more, a few more people, you know, opening up their minds to, you know, the benefits of cannabis. But like you're saying, there was a big media attack on him.
Well, I got news for you all. I'm sitting here in the media right now, and I'm enjoying the benefits of cannabis with my buddies. I'm sitting here smoking a big bud with my buds and passing it back and forth.
Oh, good on you, mate.
Well, it's the way it should be done. Have you ever noticed it? I've got this saying, weed, it brings people together. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The caller number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Back in a minute.
Plenty.
My reach is global. My paper's secure. My cause is noble. And I'm going to blow you out for sure. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we have a hardcore smoker and cannabis activist, Casper Leach from Time for Hemp, and a hardcore activist and medicinal user, Billy McKee. And we have a hardcore radio show host who simply wants the truth to come out about whatever the heck the guests on this show wind up talking about. So you get people who know what they're talking about, and you frickin' listen. And not only listen, you implement these ideas. You know, I don't know. Like, my history in cannabis activism, that was actually how I kind of started, right? The Daktory. Yep. If you go and search Daktory on YouTube, D-A-K-T-O-R-Y, in New Zealand we call weed Dak, hence
that
the Dak Factory.
That is a New Zealand term that is just so cool, it's so groovy that when you hear it, you just know it's probably a gathering of stoners.
Well, yep. And invariably that's what it was, and I attended a number of Dak-related activities, Dak-related protests, Dak-related public speeches and things like that, all with good information and with tens of thousands of hits on the videos, like all the Prime videos that have actually received a lot of hits from the Daktory of my videos, okay? No Shiite Muslim, and but the reason I'm not doing hardcore cannabis activism anymore is because that was all we were getting.
Oh, yeah. You were just getting hits. You weren't getting support.
Well, hits in a plural, dualistic sense of the word, yes. And it occurred to me that it mattered not the numbers that you wound up getting turning out or the organization that you put into place. The Lord does come down on you and demonize you and prevent you from going ahead. And it occurred to me that cannabis was one issue, only one, amidst an entire myriad of economic and political scumbaggery that is going on that are all supporting and interconnected with this grand global government-type conspiracy in the UN and the trade deals and all of that sort of stuff, that I couldn't just focus on this one issue anymore. Because there was so much important stuff going on that was the very reason why cannabis activism alone would not get cannabis legalized. Mm. You need to get rid of the entire apparatus of the New World Order that is currently sucking the lifeblood out of your country and your people as we speak before you can even think about getting pot totally legalized without being raided
like
by
vampires.
The DEA. Well, they
are. Our leaders sound like vampires.
They are. Do they not suck the lifeblood out of you? Do they not increase your taxes? Do they not take away your freedoms? Do they not sell out your country to foreign bankers? Do they not start foreign wars for absolutely no reason? Do they not send our young people over there to die and or get traumatized and or get wounded and come home and to become America's homeless population?
Hey,
they do all of this stuff.
One question at a time. I'm still on number two. I haven't got the answer to number two yet.
But exactly right, what you say, Vinny, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's not just the cannabis is an issue, you know, there's lots of issues and they all interlink exactly like what you're saying, and it's all coming from where you say, you know, the UN and our puppet governments. But I see the Americans have got a chance to change their puppet government coming up in a few days, so I hope a lot of guys will vote for third parties, you know, get the Liberals or the Greens or something, their votes over there, you know, just to to get some power away from those other two crazy puppets. But we've got the same problem in New Zealand. Our two main parties over here that maintain most of the power, they've maintained all these
well, that's what we're hoping to do with Measure 80, is that we tell people that even though you might think that your vote for puppet A or puppet B might not matter, what will matter is if you do go out and vote for yes on Measure 80 and the other two states that have it on the ballot, because especially on Measure 80, it's written in such a way to withstand federal challenging court and international challenging court, so that when the federal government comes to shut it down, they cannot.
And when the international government says, well, you can't continue with trade like that, we can say, oh, yes, we can. And there is no way of stopping it. And then it really is an end to prohibition. So, yeah, we hope to be able to cut the strings on the puppets, even though we can't get rid of the puppets.
Well, there's the other element as well. Under federal law, cannabis is illegal, and yet under, say, California law, medical marijuana is legal, and yet they were not able to prevent the DEA from coming in and raiding cannabis stores. So now I'm going somewhere with this. Hold on. I'm going somewhere with this. Sheriff Richard Mack and a number of other sheriffs have kind of formed this coalition to enforce local law and to prevent the federal government from tampering with it. So I would say that recruiting sheriffs as well as other local law enforcement and telling them about Major 80, and that just in case the federal government does come in, you need local sheriffs who are enforcing their local jurisdiction, who are elected law enforcement officials.
So we're kind of there. We've
enforce
got to
the local law.
We've got a senator that's introduced an industrial hemp bill into the United States Congress, and our attorney general attitude is that medical marijuana patients need better access to their medications, and the mayors in most cities are also pro-medical marijuana, and they also recognize the need for these jobs and for creating these products in their state to give a better revenue base to keep schools open. And they're tired of putting out money on incarcerating people when they need to be putting out money to expand schools and to pay for pavement of roads. So they are behind us. And in fact, when Paul had his garden broken into about a year or so ago, when the police showed up, they wanted to, first of all, get the tape so they could catch the predators in action. And they made it a point to thank Paul for his hard work because it made it possible for them to focus their attention on real crime in the city and to stop chasing people for tampering with the plant. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people in the state of Oregon who are really fed up with these inept laws that's causing them to jump through hoops that they can no longer afford. Prohibition is a luxury item, and it's a luxury item America can no longer afford.
Yeah.
Well, I've never felt like I'm surrounded with more luxury than when I'm handcuffed in the back of a police car for pot.
Well, if I pay for that, you know, it's one thing.
Hey, those cop cars are nice, man. They actually do have rather comfy seats.
Those handcuffs are nice as well, eh? Not comfortable handcuffs.
See, and also, the mattresses that they've got in the cells as well, these are kind of rubber-covered sort of flexi sort of pad mattresses. They're remarkably comfy, too.
Okay. Take it you've been there.
I have.
Yeah?
I enjoyed the police hospitality. They made me bread with margarine and gave me a banana.
Yep. Oh, how nice.
It was cool. I felt like Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
In fact, my brother one time, he was serving Nelson Mandela as like a waiter, and they were having some problems in the kitchen. It was all being delayed and things like that. And he'd been giving them bread and water and stuff like that at the table. And Ben comes out with my brother. He says, well, Mr. Mandela, I very much apologize. We're having some delays in the kitchen with your meal. Would you like some more bread and water? And Nelson looks at him and he says, after spending 20 years on Robben Island on a diet of exclusively bread and water, I think I've had just about enough of it.
Well, it's a wonder he survived that, eh?
Well, I think that's what happens when you've got external faith, a faith in a cause. Faith in a higher power, faith in your own destiny or something like that. It allows you to break through all these barriers that are laid out in front of you and just cast them aside and say, you know what? That's not the reality that is going to end me. I will choose my reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and you're right, that can be done, because when I was in the military, there was times when I could not deal with my surroundings to the point where I was able to, in my mind, somehow transport myself to another part of my path in life, to another spot in the universe,
to where I was able to find my zen, my peace, so that I can move forward without killing the people around me. Just saying.
Yeah.
See, and this is what I'm talking about. I always wondered what goes through the minds of these police officers that bust people like us, okay? Whether they think they're doing the right thing by society. And I'm reminded of Barry Cooper, who made the DVD Never Get Busted Again, who was literally an award-winning poster child for busting people for drugs, setting them up, doing all of this manipulative and evil stuff in order to make more drug busts than anybody, you know, giving the dog the indication to give a false signal so that they can arbitrarily search somebody, racial profiling, the whole works. And it was one time, one person said one thing to him that made him change his entire direction. And it was, "Officer, did you know that cannabis has never killed a single person in 10,000 years of recorded usage?" We can turn these people around. I want to, like LEAP, for example, law enforcement against prohibition, people who have actually done really horrible, manipulative, evil, lying things to innocent people who come out and realize what they've done. And dedicate a proportion of their career, in fact, put their careers on the line
by
coming out to support those people.
Which reminds me, may I interject something here? On my program, every Wednesday we have Law Enforcement Against Prohibition Day, Leap Day, and the co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition is the joint host. I love saying joint host. And I make it a point to always ask, you know, or if they're the first time on the show, each of the members, whether they be a judge, a lawyer, a former member of the DEA, a border guard, then they feel like a whore in church once they realize that these laws were inept, but they continue to arrest people. And usually they make the comment that once they did realize that these laws were inept, it became their pathway out of that career and into a more rational spot in their life where they are at now, which is being involved in trying to end this prohibition. And they also feel that by being involved in the negative aspect of it on the front lines, the manner in which they were, makes them now even more effective as they try to bring these horrible policies to an end.
Yeah, they've certainly done a lot of good, Lee.
Well, here's the point. I figured that there's a movement growing in the world just called the truth movement, for lack of a better term. People who realize what's going on, regardless of what the sector is, whether it be the financial sector, the drug war, the pharmaceuticals, or whatever. They just want to know the truth, and they want real policy to be implemented to address real issues instead of BS policy basically more scumbaggery. That's what, to me, encapsulate this whole thing. And it's too much for one person to do in every single sector because it's too ingrained in our society and it currently surrounds us. So any one person who attacks one aspect of it will just be attacked back by all these other aspects, sort of thing, like you're surrounded. However, it's the tactic of the cactus to cover itself in spines in every direction so that whenever it is attacked from any direction, that little attacker will get a little prick to remind it. And I felt that the truth movement in itself, in all these different sectors, in any town, in any issue, there'll be an activist or a person there sacrificing their time who's been doing this for a long while, who knows exactly what's going on and exactly how to fix the problems. What we need to do here is act as a global cactus, not to bring us together so that we'll all have one global government or whatever, but only to bring us together to repel the scumbaggery element, to dismantle it all piece by piece with no comeback, because that's the problem. The problem isn't solving the problem. The problem is the comeback once you do.
Well, and what blows my mind is the way that these ass clowns have a tendency of stepping forward and speaking lies publicly. I mean, how can you, as Eric Holder, stand up and say, "The sun is not out at noon," when you're also saying marijuana has no medical value, or you say that there's no true industry to this plant, this plant's bad for you? You make it sound like this a snake is going to bite you and kill you once you crawl up into a venomous ball of poison and die. And then after you've said all these crappy things that you know is not true, your mothers know is not true, the people walking down the street who heard it know it's not true, how do you look yourself in the mirror at night and go, I'm not an ass clown? I mean, my God, you are, until you start teaching the truth and quit being used in such a way by the petrochemical companies. You're nothing more than the middle of a three-winged circus being the ass clown on display.
Yeah, and we've got a caller coming in here, Rob from L.A. We've only got about 40 seconds or so before we go to break, mate. You can ask a question and we'll probably address it afterwards.
Oh, well, hi. I actually have something a little off topic, and I just want to let you know about it. I know you guys mentioned it at the beginning of the show, the chemtrails and stuff. And also the radiation from the Fukushima area. Devastating for you guys, I'm sure. You know, the Fed has a lot of secrets to it. And I won't take much time because I own, you know, but anyway, this is...
You only got like 5 seconds, man.
Oh, okay, yeah. I have a pyramid.
The break, man.
Oh, okay, sure.
All right, so we'll come back to you, Rob, in our life. He's talking about chemtrails and radiation. Well, interestingly enough, if you plant hemp on a radioactive field, the plant actually draws the radiation out of the field and into the plant. Isn't that interesting? You can decontaminate radioactive areas like that. And I wonder if it works for aluminium and barium, another toxic chemical sprayed from chemtrails too. We'll be right back after the break at TheVideoSwitchShow.com.
The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem. If we're gonna fix this place, my living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino on Martina Tonga. We don't own the bands. The parliament does so where do you have a stand? They paying their bills off your back with heavy tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contraband. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Why is our human rights?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about replacing our human rights with commercial slavery. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week, 5 till 7 central. We're going to go to our caller now, Rob in L.A. You still there, buddy?
Yep. Yeah. Hi, it's Ross here. Anyway, I've invented a pyramid, and if you move this particular pyramid, it's a small frame pyramid. It has to be moved at a certain time. When the sun rises, in fact, or 5:30, and you have to move it for about 5 or 6 miles. I'm not sure what that is in kilometers, but 5 or 6 miles around 5:30. You do that a couple days, and the air is clean. The third day you do it, no chemtrails. And you also want it, but it's perviantpyramid.net is my website. P like Paul, URV like Victor, IANCE, PerviantPyramid.net. And I got instructions to download how you can make your own. So it's okay. Very effective.
Well, Rob, that's totally off topic, bro. However, there have been a lot of experiments with pyramids. Dig this, ladies and gentlemen. Dude put up a couple of PVC pipes and made an impromptu pyramid in his garden. And he just had a couple of weeds and stuff like that growing underneath the pyramid and a couple of weeds and stuff like that growing next to it. And the things that were under the pyramid grew like 3 to 4 times larger, healthier, and stronger, faster.
Oh, yeah.
It was extraordinary the difference that pyramids can make in gardening. And there's also been a massive pyramid trial. The point that I was trying to make is marijuana growers should
have
indoor pyramids over your grows. you can there's quite a high likelihood, I believe, based upon a lot of the research and evidence that I've seen, of improving the speed and the capacity of your plants flowering and growth in general. They'll grow faster, harder, stronger, everything you want in a marijuana plant and in a partner in the case of Casper Leach.
And it's true. I keep a pyramid in my pants, and I don't need Viagra.
Yeah, exactly. The pyramid in Casper's Leech is the only known free energy device.
Yep. And it clears the air of chemtrails, too, when you have an orgone-framed pyramid. That's what the Pervyonce pyramid is. And it's 70-mile radius, but you have to do it. It works with the Earth energy somehow, and you have to move it around in the morning.
The ancients believed that pyramids, or the ancient Chinese, sorry, believed that the pyramids that they've got over there in China, there's lots of them, balance the Earth's chi. And there was an incident where they attempted to demolish one of these pyramids, and all of a sudden the weather started going absolutely haywire. It was thunder, it was lightning, it was like Hurricane Sandy just decided to pop by for a few days, you know.
We shouldn't have moved that mountain.
Yeah, it's like, maybe this wasn't such a good idea, man. maybe people do this stuff for a reason. Oh, Rob, well, thank you for your call. We want to kind of round off with our guest. That's kind of more relative to what we're talking about. But, yeah, thanks for the call, man.
But just what Rob was saying about the chemtrails and the nuclear fallout and stuff, and what you were saying earlier, Vinny, about the cannabis and stuff, the war on drugs, they are all connected, right?
Yeah. How much does it cost to give you a round of chemotherapy? In New Zealand's about $25,000. How much does it cost to grow some weed in your background and in your backyard?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Who's making the money?
Yeah, of course, eh? And who's paying it? See, it's all widening the poverty gap. And it's cleaning us out for money, and it's all heading off to people that have already got plenty.
And I was thinking about this the other day as well. Let's say you go out and you spend $20, Billy. You could buy a box of beer, or you could buy a foil, about a gram of cannabis. Okay.
Yeah.
In New Zealand, this is the case. How many times would you be able to get drunk off that one box of beer versus how many times you'd be able to get high off that 1 gram of cannabis? The amount of times that you'd be able to use the cannabis in order to get high is vastly more, like maybe once with the alcohol, and nearly half a dozen times with the gram of cannabis, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't stack up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot more pleasant, and relaxing having a smoke of cannabis than it is drinking beer. Although they do get it, they go well together as long as you don't sort of overdo the beer, but they're compatible.
Yeah. But what I think is that a lot more people, like we were saying about revitalizing the rural community by getting hemp production back in there, we should also revitalize the alcohol industry by encouraging home brewing and all of that sort of stuff. There's a lot going on here in New Zealand now, and I've got a couple of mates who are just starting up their home brew kits and things of that nature. So alcohol can be much, much cheaper. And the whole point behind cheap alcohol is not necessarily so you can just get wasted every day or whatever. It's just so that when you do want to have a drink, it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg that goes directly into the pockets of incredibly dangerous scumbaggery alcohol baron mother frackers.
You're such a cynic.
The home brews are good. I used to do one. We used to make a big ginger beer. And one large bottle of ginger beer, man, you knew you'd had a drink. You were sort of. One bottle was too much to drive on.
And of course, there's the whole cottage industry that the cannabis really relies on. And I believe if there was a regulated market, you would have major growers with huge facilities and things of that nature. But for particular areas and cities and what have you, you'd have known growers who are kind of like artists, music artists and what have you. They're known for their paintings or they're known for their music, yeah. And they develop, yeah, an underground reputation. And so people, yeah, are always trying to go to their gigs or whatever. So you'd have particular strains that are grown by particular famous growers or whatever that would make up the wall of available cannabis at, say, a coffee shop or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, or Dactyl, so, or Green Cross Outlet or something. Oh, the Dactyl was a really good idea because a lot of small towns have got nothing, no entertainment, nothing. Even Palmerston North, you know, there's hardly, Annalyn, there's hardly anything here. And a Dactyl would go down great there because there's such a social place to go. So I only went to Dactyl a few times because it's so far, but, you know, they had table tennis tables, they had that ear hockey, they had all these different games and chess and, you know, all these different things. They'd even had their own library there. They had a band and a stage and everything. And it was a great place just to go locally. Just, you know, you just want to get out of the house, you want to go somewhere and you want to socialise. And it was perfect for that, you know. So I'd love to see that. Yeah. Something like that.
They had DJ decks and Xbox and overhead projectors. And then the cops came in and took it all.
Yeah.
Several times. Yeah. And at times before that, people who were actually running the shop inside the Dactyl were actually ripping the place off and stood over Dr. Green, even stole his freaking wallet.
Okay, I didn't know what it was.
Stood over him and took his wallet from him, you know?
Yeah, hell, that's incredible.
And I don't go down there much anymore because after doing 2 years of cannabis activism with them and having tens of thousands of hits on the videos, I still have to pay $5 for entry.
Well, okay. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just sometimes you wish that things stayed the way they were, and other times you live to see things the way you'd never envision it and would never want to.
Yeah.
But, you know, you live
and you live. Yeah, Vinny, that sounded too philosophical.
All right, well, Casper, we've got about a minute to wrap up if you've got any special words of wisdoms. You've got a new website, Time for Pets, as well, don't you?
Yeah, I got a new radio show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com that airs that and also on AM FM stations all across America. It's called Time for Pets. It airs every Tuesday from 11 until 1 on Pacific Standard Time. Which follows my other show, Time for Hemp, that airs Monday through Friday on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and on AM FM stations all across America. And I encourage people to tune in and take part in either animal activism or hemp activism. In either case, you have an opportunity to find new ways to make the world a better place. All on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Yes, this paid presentation brought to you by RecycleYourAnimals.com.
Sounds fantastic, doesn't it? I've got on American Free Radio anyway. They're doing great stuff.
Well, by the way, just before we close out, American Freedom Radio has been climbing up the rankings on Alexa.com. If you type in AmericanFreedomRadio.com, you will find out that it is in the top, I think, what was it? It just hit the 33,000th most popular website in the U.S., and it went up from the 175,000 website in the world to 169,000. I know, Casper, you'd like that. And,
oh, yeah.
And so, you know, American Freedom Radio is growing, and not in a little way, okay? We're talking about a 100% increase in listenership in the last month alone, ladies and gentlemen. Do you have any idea who can double their web traffic in a month? American Freedom Radio can. Because of shows like this and like all of the other people that we've got on this network who do fantastic shows, provide real content, real strength and purpose to the radio streams that really should have been there the whole time, but now we have to solve that problem and create this platform right here for you. We'll be right back another time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again.
All right.